Family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of Off the Hour, right here on CQUT 90.3 FM. We are 21 days into the month of April. We are broadcasting from unceded Mohawk and Anishinaabe territory. You're tuned into The Avalanche, a special presentation of CQUT's Community News Department. The Avalanche seeks to cover issues affecting those with disabilities. I'm your host, Zoe. On today's show, an episode from the podcast Disability is Art. This episode is called The Community is Really Important, but Really Hard to Get Involved Into. All that and more right here on CQUT 90.3 FM. You are listening to The Avalanche, where all abilities are welcome. If you would like to get involved, you can call 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. You can also follow us on Twitter, at @AvalancheCKUT.
Level in your region or a neighboring region is red. To curb the spread of COVID-19, gatherings with family and friends in private homes and yards are prohibited. Travel between regions should be avoided, and traveling to yellow zones is forbidden. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. Visit quebec.ca/coronavirus to learn more about the other measures in place. Follow all the rules, all the time, no exceptions. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CKUT 90.3 FM. On today's show, we have an episode of the Disability is Art podcast. That's up now.
This podcast is meant to be upbeat, fun, and informative, but sometimes we touch on some triggering topics. Today's episode deals with mental illness and ableism, eating disorders, transphobia, and trans misogyny.
Hey, everybody. Switching it up today, and I'm doing the intro instead of Kelsey. So welcome to the Disability is Art podcast, a podcast about art and disability here in Chibucto, Halifax, Nova Scotia. I am your host, truly, and I am joined today by my co-hosts, Emma Mater and Kelsey McDonald. And today's podcast, we are going to be interviewing RJ Rovine, a student, a local drag performer that goes by Johnny Dapper, and one of my close friends, thus us being in the same room together because we are each other's bubble households. All right. And we had Wi-Fi trouble, so we couldn't do two separate. Story of COVID.
Yeah. Zoom did us dirty in the first take of this.
So dirty.
We're resilient. We just keep trying.
And as awkward as it is, RJ and I will attempt to look at the camera instead of each other while talking. Okay. So why don't you tell us of yourself, RJ?
Awesome. Thank you guys for having me on here today. My name is RJ. I use he, they pronouns. I am a student at Dow right now, so I study recreation therapy. I'm also, as Truly said, a local drag performer. I go by Johnny Dapper. That's my stage name. And I'm soon going to start a queen persona as well, hopefully. I'm in my third year of study. I am also a trans man, so that's a fun fact about myself. comes with its joys and its struggles. And I'm just really happy to be on this podcast today.
Thanks for being with us, RJ. I'm really excited. You're our second guest on the podcast, so this is new for us too. So we're really excited to have guests and to interview people and to get some more exposure for folks who, you know, are disability advocates in the community that people may not know, experience and share the same things as them. So that's really cool. So you mentioned that you're a drag performer. Do you want to talk to us, just like for any listeners who don't understand what drag might be, or use the word drag king? And I think a lot of people, when they think drag, they think, like you said, drag queens. And I think it's important to touch a little bit on what the difference is for folks who don't know.
Yeah. So I am, as a drag king, it's kind of just, I almost try for the opposite of a drag queen. I want to look like a dude in whatever that looks like for me. And so I usually, as a drag king, like all my makeup is kind of, we contour for drag queens. We like make like our facial features really pop for cheekbones and like really wanting to accentuate your eyes. Whereas like for a drag king, you're trying to like make your jawline pop out a little more. You might do some eye makeup, but you're also working with your eyebrows a lot. Like There's just a few differences in the makeup, but also everyone's drag looks super different. So you never know who someone's a performer until you ask how they identify. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I guess, for drag as a whole is when you dress up as a accentuated gender of whatever you like.
Yeah, like, I always think of drag as like, it's like an exaggerated expression of gender. So like, and sometimes it's like a lot more subtle. Like there, I know like lots of drag performers that, you know, are female impersonators, and they can just like be super stunning supermodel. And then there are some that are doing like divine style, like really like costumey, exaggerated, you know, eyebrows like up here. and so I think it's like really cool, but a lot of people don't know about drag kings because it's not as popular. It's like increasing in popularity now, I think. But yeah, there's not as many spaces for people who are doing drag king stuff. So I'm really excited to hear more about what that community is like and like what you're like, how you got into it and all of those things. So
yeah, so like exactly, drag kings, it's just a smaller community. You kind of really have to know who you're reaching out to, I found. Like I reached out to queens originally, and they kind of helped me find the kings in the community. Whereas like once I got connected with some of the kings, they were able to add me to a lot of stuff happens on social media. Because we're such a small community, there's like some large social media groups for drag kings that are kind of keep us connected worldwide. Very fun, but can also be very educational at times for everyone because you get to see what other communities are struggling with. But like, as far as getting connected in my local community, like I reached out on Instagram and Facebook to different groups. And then I also attended a few shows myself, and kind of realized that this was something I wanted to get into. The first time I ever saw a drag king perform was when I went to go and see Naomi Smalls when she came here. And one of the few guests who were opening the show was a drag king. And that was the first time I'd ever seen someone who wasn't a queen perform. Mm-hmm. And so that was really exciting for me. And I kind of thought, oh, maybe I could do this. But I put that off for a little while because it was very overwhelming and terrifying to me, like already with my anxiety, that was a whole deal. But then not knowing other people who wanted to perform or did perform. So that's why the community was really important to get involved in, but it was also very hard to get involved into.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's an interesting thing to think about because a lot of the time people think about drag as something that's like super accepted now and super popular because of shows like RuPaul's Drag Race, and the fact that a lot of, like, I think we had a conversation, Kelsey, you and I in person, talking about how drag used to be this really like taboo thing when you were in university, and now, like, I know more straight people. I'm not trying to call you old, I promise.
I'm so old.
But like, I know more straight people now that watch RuPaul's Drag Race than I do queer people. Yeah. And so, like, did you, it's an interesting thought of like being nervous about doing drag as like a smaller person. Do you find that like were you nervous about telling people or like promoting yourself of being like, hey, I do drag?
Yeah, I was very worried about how to even tell people. Like, I really wanted to, because I was like, whoa, I'm really proud of like this art that I do. Like, because I work so many hours at learning how to do different things, and like between the makeup and the dancing portions and then like cutting music together, like you really get to do so much with the art. So I wanted to tell people, but I really didn't feel like I could. I found at times, people would think if I said I did drag that I was a drag queen, which is not a bad thing for them to think, but then I'd have to explain what drag king is. I struggled with the fact that there's a lot of gatekeeping that happens sometimes, not really within the communities, but like on shows like RuPaul's Drag Race, where trans performers, it seemed like you have to be performing as the opposite gender to do drag.
Right.
And we know that you don't. Like, you can really perform drag whatever that looks like for you. But I started off performing while I identified as a cis woman. And then somewhere through that, my drag outfits became my normal outfits and my everyday look. And so it turned into, then I was like, okay, I wanted really, I am a man, so can I still do drag as a king? That was a struggle, but it helped to, I had to really think it through and just also not kind of care what other people are going to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of hope for the best. So when I started doing my Instagram promoting and Facebook stuff, a lot of people found out about my drag at that time, which I was excited about, but it also put it out of my control. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't control who knew what I did.
Yeah.
And that was overwhelming a lot, because I wanted to know who knew what I was doing and what they were thinking of it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, like, unlike a lot of art forms, there's a safety aspect involved with drag because, you know, it is, for a lot of people, still really dangerous to do this kind of expression. And you're right, people do make a lot of assumptions about you when you decide, like, you know, if you're doing drag, you know, just because you're dressing up a certain way and you created this persona and this character that you're enjoying performing on stage, that doesn't necessarily mean that's a direct reflection of who you are. You know, some people are doing drag to be the opposite of themselves, and to like walk through the world. You know, if you're a shy person, maybe your drag performer is this outrageously like extrovert, and that's really fun for you. But then when the makeup comes off and you are yourself, if people expect you to be that way, that's like, it's really challenging to interact with people and sort of set those boundaries. And I think too, like, you're right. Once you say, okay, I'm going public with this and I'm going to let everybody know, and it's out of my control. Like, that's, I know I really struggle with that idea as well. Like, even with this podcast, I'm like, oh my God, like, people are going to listen. Oh no.
It's really overwhelming to think that, you know, you don't have that control over who knows. Cause when you talk to people, you do have that control. And then when we put it on social media or on the internet, you're like, oh, well, hope for the best, fingers crossed.
Yeah. And it's like another layer with like drag, like as an artist in general, like even with my own podcast, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so nervous. People are going to listen. But like, not only are they looking, you know, being an artist in general is super vulnerable. Like, you're putting your work and your art out there and people are going to have thoughts and you can't control if they don't like it. But not only can people not like it, but then people tend to make assumptions about your identity and who you are and like how they should perceive you and what you should or should not be doing, especially with the, you know, being a trans person.
Yeah,
in everyone, drag.
Everyone has a lot more judgments. Like, I feel like since I've come out as trans, doing drag, like, everyone feels like they have a say in my life at times, which is very unusual because I'm like, wow, you guys did not have a say before. So people like to assume things that are, they're like, well, this is what you should be doing in your life. And so, yeah, no, it's definitely strange putting it out there. And it's also, I really had to take a look at the safety aspect, like where I am here in Halifax is quite safer space to do drag, but I couldn't do it at home. And because it's one of those art forms where someone disagrees with it, they can go online and say something, but some people take it further when it comes to art in the queer community. And so depending on how much they disagree and how they want to express that, it can get, it can put you in unsafe situations at times. So I definitely had to take that into account and just really look at who I was sharing this information with.
So you're from BC, you mentioned, and then you moved here to the East Coast, and then that's, you started doing your drag performances when you moved here, right?
Yes. Yeah, I did not do it at home. It would not have been a supportive or safe environment to do it in the Okanagan Valley. There's not a very large scene, and there's a lot of very vocal, unfortunately, conservative people who don't agree.
So we were talking about how being here in Halifax, like, you know, we're a smaller community, but we also have a lot of young people that live here in the city because we're surrounded by universities. So we have like the most universities per capita. I think there's 6 post-secondary institutions within Halifax alone. So we have like this tremendous surgence of young people come September through till April during the academic post-secondary school year, which I think is what allows our city to be, you know, super inclusive and sort of forward thinking, because it's like young people are like sort of deciding what like nightlife.
Yes.
Remember, I'm super old. Like, what do people do after 8 p.m.? I don't know. Yeah, so like nightlife is sort of like dictated by what young people are into. And we touched a little bit on RuPaul's Drag Race. I've been a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race for a really long time. And like, my background is in theater. So a lot of my friends, you know, were experimenting with drag in theater all the time. And, you know, I had friends who were doing drag, like while we were going through school together. And it was the same thing. It was very much like, I'm about to tell you a secret about myself. And I need to know that you're going to take care of that secret and it's safe with you, but I actually do drag and you can come see me at Reflections or you can come see me at Men's and Molly's, but please do not tell anybody it's me. Please do not let anybody know that you know who I am outside of this persona. So you can come see me and support me and celebrate me, but please, it's not safe for everyone to know that that's me. And I think a lot of the time with drag, you can get really far away from yourself. Like people can look drastically different and you would not recognize them outside of drag. And so it's interesting for me to sort of kind of start there when I was in university. And now we're at this point where everybody loves RuPaul's Drag Race. It's super popular. It's winning awards. It's becoming mainstream. But I think you're right in that it means that more people have an opinion on it. Mm-hmm. And that I know from a lot of friends that do drag, they say that like one of the frustrating things about RuPaul's Drag Race being so popular is that now so many people have opinions on what drag is and what it can't be. And when something is sort of like outside of that, like the mainstream popular drag, you know, if something's outside glam and beauty and is sort of going into like artsy, sometimes like gory drag, like if someone's going down those routes, like they're sort of seen as like, that's not drag. That's something really weird and different. So do you notice that when you're in the drag scene? Do you notice like people trying to gatekeep what is drag, what's not drag? And
yes, I actually think I see a lot of different sides from the online perspective to the in-person. Between a lot of people like who perform in drag, RuPaul's Drag Race is just not very respected now for people who are performers, only because it really gives a one-sided view and has also, you know, there's been comments that have been made by RuPaul and different hosts that don't really support the inclusion of the community and makes it more gatekeeping. Mm-hmm. So I found that it's really good for people to feel like they know a little more and like more accepted of it. But I think at one point we had said, sometimes there's more cis straight people watching RuPaul's Drag Race than queer people now. Mm-hmm. But it has given, because there's now other shows that do drag, like Dragula is that horror drag show. And it's
too so gory cool. For me. Every time I try and watch it, I'm like, I'm going to barf. I love the concept, but every time I'm like, whoa, no.
Too much.
They go all out and like I see more creativity in their drag at times.
Yeah, super punk rock. Their drag is like, whoa.
And so it's very different. I think it's hopefully and seems to almost be getting there where people are recognizing that there's RuPaul's Drag Race, which is pageant drag.
Yeah.
That's pageant queens. Whereas
and we see that within the show itself, right? Like you hear the queens talking about like there's pageant drag, which is like, you know, people doing like Miss America, but there's like the drag version of Miss America. And so it's all about like poise and beauty and grace. And then, you know, we have queens that are out there doing comedy and, you know, they're falling on that trope of like, you know, a really, you know, masculine looking man dressed as a woman that's funny, and they're making jokes about it. Some of them are just genuine comedians and they're realizing that to set themselves apart, like I know Trixie Mattel says this all the time, and same thing with like Bob the drag queen, they say that like their comedy and their music that they make, being a drag queen is sort of sets them outside of that sort of, you know, that's what makes them unique and special, is that they're doing these traditional art forms in drag, and that's really cool. And they have like these huge followings. And so it's interesting to for people who are like following RuPaul's Drag Race to realize that, you know, this scene is much bigger than what RuPaul lets you see.
And I heard a really interesting, sorry, Kelly.
No, you go.
I was just gonna say, like, I heard a really interesting, or saw I on
Facebook, Twitter, something, a really like interesting quote, and like I with it. But at the same time, like, it's like someone was saying that, you know, if you watch RuPaul's Drag Race but you don't go to drag shows in your own community, then you don't like drag, you like RuPaul's Drag Race.
True.
And it's one of those things of like, especially like with RuPaul's Drag Race, like being super like blatantly transphobic, and like an overwhelming a number of the queens are like cis, white, and skinny. And the idea that like, you know, that's what drag is, when really it's been, you know, it's a long history of like trans performers, BIPOC performers, like that's what built the trans, like, no, trans, that's what that's what built the drag community. Like that's where its roots come from, was explicitly queer communities, and like often poor and marginalized and communities of color finding a way to express themselves, when, you know, a lot of the times, you know, it was formed outside of, you know, the club scene that was more so popular and among like queer whites.
Well, it's interesting that you'd said it was a mix-up, but like saying the trans group and drag, and how there a lot of people seem to mix the two and really think that being trans is the same as doing drag, and you're like, whoa, that is not it. So just when you made that the word slip, it just, it makes sense too, because a lot of people do see that sometimes,
and I think people say you do. I think people spent so much time as well being like, oh, it's not the same thing, which is fair, because people were like, oh, so if you do drag, you're trans. But then it also became to a point that like,
you
people
can't be
don't
trans if and, you do drag.
And do drag. And so people are like, oh, drag's for cis people, like drag's for like cis men. And which is so bonkers, because there was an overlap. Like it was a safe way for people to express, you know, or like to experiment with gender, to express like different feelings about gender identity in a safe way. You know, that's what the roots of drag came from, is where people couldn't express that in their everyday life. And so now it's interesting that like, because of the popularity of a very specific type of drag and a very specific type of performer, we see that like, this is what drag looks like.
One, and I also sometimes feel almost guilty at times, because I did start drag as a cis woman, and then it did allow me to explore gender and to be more comfortable with the fact that I'm a trans man. But I played into this stereotype that sometimes invalidates some drag performers. So at times I kind of felt a little guilty about that, because I was like, oh, I am following that path, but trying to follow that in a positive way and like really still advocate for that, for the drag community, as that you don't have to be trans, but you can be, and it doesn't have to mix. It doesn't have to matter.
Mm-hmm. You know, and there are some sort of like non-binary drag performers out there as well that aren't, you know, falling into one category or the other, right? It kind of feels sometimes that we are being like, it's not binary, right? So there are performers that fall sort of like in between, where they're doing like super glam feminine makeup, but they have, you know, a mustache or something, or they're, you know, they're wearing masculine clothing, they're doing like, and all of that is part of the spectrum of the of drag, and all part of the performance. And so locally we have drag shows that happen at Men's and Molly's, and then we also have whenever we have big name drag queens, like queens that are coming from outside of Nova Scotia, outside of Halifax, sometimes mostly from RuPaul's Drag Race, then we'll have all kinds of other queens that are local, Atlantically, will come and perform and open for these big name queens. So one of the things that, like, my favorite drag show is the Atlantic Drag Star that we have here. That one is always the best. I like, even like, I've seen all the RuPaul's drag queen queens, and it's always great. But whenever we see local talent performing, it just makes me so proud and excited. And I was just wondering, have you ever participated in Atlantic Drag Star or like been a contestant? I'd be curious to know because
I have not. I want to. I think that the other thing with the drag community is that you have to have connections, because the drag shows that are put on by very well-known local performers. And mm-hmm. so, and they're all wonderful. You just have to find them is the thing. Like, I remember reaching out to performers to say, hey, I want to do this. Can I join your show? And reaching out and joining shows in that way. It's very much done over social media right now. And so I think it's looking at how can you find it? How can you access it?
Yeah. And I think in the drag community, like they talk about like drag mothers or like drag daddies who are sort of like the people who guide you. And that used to be how it is. Because like you said, these things aren't, you know, when they weren't mainstream, they weren't readily accessible, right? You couldn't just Google drag Halifax and then a bunch of things would come out. It used to be a lot more hidden. And so you would do the same thing. You would look to the community and find these performers and then ask if they would sort of take you on as like a baby and train you in this like art style. My cat has the zoomies. If you can hear him running around, he's just going nuts. But now that there's the internet, and I'm curious too with COVID, like, I wonder if that relationship is like, you know, you're saying you took on the role of like, I'm going to reach out to these people. I'm going to try and find these like mentors within the community to help me get where I want to be as a drag performer. What advice would you give to people who are interested in attempting drag now the environment we're in online?
It's different now that we're online, but some of it's still the same. Like, and the other thing is we talk a lot about those drag parents. Mm-hmm. And one thing I recognized really fast was that I didn't need one. I always looking for one. Have some people I would love to reach out to. Let's reach my
send your applications in now.
I would love to there's some people who have amazing art forms that I just would love to learn from them. But now in this online side, reaching out, like finding people's Instagrams and Facebooks and just reaching out in interest. I reached out to a handful of people and I did not have a bad response. I had drag queens, kings, royalty who were like, yeah, like here's some ways to get you connected. And they'll tell you if they're taking on drag kids, drag babies, like they'll tell you if they're like willing to take people on. And also you can perform without a drag parent and get one later. So it's all about making those connections with people. I know that it was overwhelming for me to reach out to people. Like my anxiety was not having it. I listened to music the whole time and just like blocked out the fact that I've done this. Mm-hmm. But once I reached out, also I was added into this Facebook group for Drag Kings, which it's, like they call it like Drag Kings Unite, and it has thousands of drag kings in it, which to see that many in one group is kind of amazing. And it's global, like you got people from all around the world in this one group, and they're putting on online shows, and all you have to do is comment on their post where they're like, hey, looking for performers, and then they'll send you however they're taking applications. It's become more accessible for sure to join a drag show because you can do it from your computer, but you have to also have the technology. The other side is that that's the other thing with the art is it's changed now that it's online from like you're doing your routine your like performance routine, you're doing your makeup,
yeah,
and then you're putting it on camera, and then you're editing. And they added this one more step that makes you be able to perfect in a way what you want it to be, but you need to learn those skills. Like I made a green screen in my room when online started. Trulie's laughing because she saw it.
It was very cute. It was your, what was it, dollar store?
Oh, we a thrifty king over here. Like we don't pay those big dollars. So I bought 9 green poster boards from Dollarama.
Resourceful.
E-tack. Stuck it on my wall. And I happened to have a computer at the time that could take videos. And I found some ways that you could green screen with online apps.
It was great.
And it worked out so well.
Your videos are adorable. They have some really good videos from quarantine.
I did make my own backgrounds in those on my digital art side too. All my art kind of worked together to do it. It was really fun. Yeah. But the quarantine shows were amazing for that reason. That you got to do all these things for the art, but also it took so long. Like it took a lot of hours to put together one show, where then, and then setting up the, how do you tip people online? How do you, which is PayPal, which has its own problems. And because we don't want to give our internet e-transfer stuff out. But it also gave a lot of opportunity. I saw a lot of activism in the community around, you know, when Black Lives Matter came up, and into even the drag community, like, because there's a lot of issues in even a lot of spaces being very predominantly white, mm-hmm. and not giving our BIPOC royalty the space and not getting tipped the same amounts. Like, there was a lot of those discussions that happened. And so I saw, especially in the summer, but I still see it now, when there was activist groups that were, you know, they're looking for donations. I saw so many shows happen where all the performers just gave all their tips to those organizations in the States, especially for, you know, the ones that are trying to find legal aid for the
protests,
for a lot of the protests.
Yeah.
So it was, we saw a big change and a lot of discussions happen even in the drag community during those times. So I went on a bit of a tangent there, but that's,
yeah. No, that was great.
Format of our podcast.
Yeah, we should have called our podcast the Tangent Podcast, because that's usually what it is. Maybe a little bit of a pivot, but our podcast is also about disability. And so I'd like to sort of touch a little bit on your relationship with disability and how that affects your art practice and the way that you engage with your art form. So I'm really curious to know how those things intersect.
Yeah. So as far as like disability goes, I got a whole little acronym of mental illnesses going on. I'm currently like in a recovery form for eating disorder. I have generalized anxiety, depression, bipolar-like symptoms, because you can't get a diagnosis for very cheap. So I just have a little mixture of wonderful things. And I find that they definitely all impact my art. Some of them in a good way. Like, man, like I, in times when I am somewhat, we call it bouncing, when I am in a form of mania where everything's wonderful in my life and very out of control for me, I also do wonderful art during that time. I come up with some great ideas for art during that time. So there's just that's definitely a huge benefit of it. But I also enjoy my meds mellowing me out, because the crashes aren't great. And then along with like, part of my anxiety makes me actually more outgoing. It like I get so anxious that I just keep talking, which can help for building.
I love it. Hello, me.
And I love it because it helps me build a lot of relationships with people very fast, which as we talked about, like the whole drag community, like community is the biggest thing to get into drag. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to find that. So sometimes it held me back, but sometimes it helped me to be able to just keep rambling on about things. So yeah, like that's any other, like if you have any prompts for that one, because I don't know what to talk about.
I do. I know you a little bit better, so I know what buttons to press. also if Kelsey has any.
Emma too.
And Emma. you just looked like you were about to talk, and then I realized I cut you off.
I'm always about to talk, so
I love it. So I know one thing that is like within the drag community, and like you said, with community, with being able to book shows, is, you know, you basically have to build your own brand, you know, as with any art form. But I find, especially with drag, where it's not just, you know, you can't just necessarily, you know, create art and then spend your energy pushing that art. Your art involves your time and energy in that moment. Like it is kind of a similar with any performance art. How do you find that affects, like, you and I both know that you've taken sort of a break from drag recently in dealing with things that are going on in your life. And do you find that, like, it's, you know, necessarily like not harmful, I guess, but, you know, do you experience sort of less community building, less opportunities because you can't put your energy into drag full time?
Yeah, that's probably like a massive thing that affects, because to community build, you have to keep doing it. You kind of, and luckily there's platforms where a lot of performers understand that you can step in and step out a bit, but yeah, you don't always have the time. Like when I'm in my lowest points, like I just can't get out of bed. I don't have the time to go and do my drag. And I had to take quite a break after this summer. That was the last time I did any of my performing, was, so it's been a bit of like a gap, and I still identify as drag performer because I do it and I want to go back into more of it. But yeah, in the summer, like a lot of things hit for me very hard. Coming out as trans hit very hard and became a huge mental catastrophe at times. And so I couldn't really put my focus into my art. And sometimes I don't like to look at, like, I know that my whole mental health struggles like affect how I deal with situations and how I respond. But I also found I was getting really upset with how it was a lot of other people's actions that created these struggles for me to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. Once I came out, like I lost my job. I lost some safe housing at the time. There was a few other elements that fell out of my life very fast that I count as more of the smaller things, and dealing with family connections all at the same time, with all my mental illnesses spiking because life fell apart. And then being like, I really want to do my art, but I just don't have the energy to. And I know that if I do my art, like I'm going to feel better.
Yeah. It's always like a circle, right? Because I definitely relate to that idea of like in manic states, I feel like a superwoman. Like I'm like, I can do all this creative stuff and I can, you know, I have all these great ideas and I'm going to make all this really cool stuff. And when I'm in that state, I don't recognize the destruction that I'm doing. So it'll be like, I'm very focused in on myself and what I want, and I'm not thinking about other people. So I'm, you know, diving really hard into something, going into hyper focus, trying to like come up, like trying to make scheduling things, I'll like get in this like state where I'm like, I'm gonna book all this stuff and then it's done and then I have to do it because I booked it, not recognizing that I'm here. Yeah. And when I come back down to, you know, even just mellow, like normal, I'm not gonna have the capacity to do all that stuff. It's unrealistic to put that amount of pressure on myself. But there's also that pull, push and pull kind of feeling where, you know, if I put all this time and effort into this art, I'm gonna feel better because I feel happy when I'm in this space, when I'm creating, but also the creativity drains like my life source a little bit. Like I feel like, oh gosh, I can't keep up with this. And trying to find that balance is really hard.
Yeah, it takes away all those spoons. Like you're just mm-hmm. done.
Yeah, you just don't have enough. And that's not great when you're working in an industry where you're trying to like maintain momentum.
Yeah. Whereas, and you find like, I don't want to miss out on things. I have a huge fear of missing out on many things. And so when you see other drag shows, it's almost hard for me to see drag shows when I'm in this point in my life, because I know I want to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I want to be there. I want to support like other performers, and I know I want to be in it. I just sometimes can't. And so like trying to find like that grace for myself to be like, it's okay. Like you're going to get back to this, but let's work on you for a hot minute here, because you need that.
Yeah. And I think in hindsight too, as artists, when we're not doing our art, I think we feel bad because social media and like entertainment and everything just feels like a constant in our lives. Like everybody's got something new coming out. Something's happening. And, you know, you think, oh no, everybody's realizing I'm not there. Everybody notices that I'm not making my stuff. People are going to be upset with me because they're a fan of mine and I'm not delivering the art that they like. And so they're going to forget about me and then I'm not going to be famous. but I'm not going to be like as successful. But that's usually like not true. I think that's like a pressure that we put on ourselves because we see everybody else doing things. But like in reality, like lots of artists take breaks. It's normal. And also 2020 has felt like 17 years in just 1 year. So I think like that feeling like, oh, we're not doing enough this year. Well, no, it's only been 1 year, folks. So it's okay.
With that, like also I agree, like that stuff where you how other people are perceiving you for not doing your art, but then also like how you're perceiving yourself for not doing your art. Mm-hmm. I had to question, I'm like, am I still an artist? Am I still a drag performer?
Yeah.
I'm doing drag. I was doing it like quite often for a while there, like even just on my own to practice skills. And so I kind of questioned that. I was like, this is a really big thing for me. Like I want to still be a drag performer. I am still a drag performer, but I don't produce anything right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so like seeing that standard that I mentally put on myself. And I think that's where a lot of people are at.
And as a drag performer, you're so many things, right? You're a makeup artist, you're a choreographer, you're a producer, you're like, you're doing so, you're the editor now that you're doing everything online. Oh,
am I clothing designer?
Yeah.
Like, is that, do you find your, that's put on you by the art form?
Yeah, okay. I think that it's also, yeah, it's that standard that of what other people expect. Mm-hmm. It's a good question. It makes me really think about it, because I think as much as I do put those standards on myself, the fact that a lot of other performers feel that too, means that it's not just an internal thing. It's being put out there by others.
So great.
Yeah, okay.
I was wondering if it's like set, like I know in the comedy community, it's like, it's outspoken. If you're not doing comedy, you're not a comedian. You don't do it. Like, people really look down on taking breaks for any reason, because, you know, the people who are doing it are the cis, able-bodied, able-minded, neurotypical men who can just drive hard at doing it, and they don't have the same, you know what I mean? Do you find that in the community? Or is it just less? Is it more internal among the community?
I definitely think it's definitely the internalized side, but the outspoken, not as much. Like, from what you're explaining in the comedy community, I think that there seems to be a lot of understanding, at least among drag performers, that that you're not going to be in every show. And I think we also know how hard it is to get representation and get, like, I don't even know if a lot of people notice when people go away and come back, because every show might have a different performer. There might be someone new joining. I think, at least right now, especially, it's harder to see when performers are active or not. But even when you are not in the quarantine times, it's so specific on who, also, what does the producer of that show, who do they want? Mm-hmm. Which is another idea of discussion there too. But so I think it's more internalized than probably outspoken within the community, but I'm not going to say 100%, because I can imagine there's probably more there. And I'm a little bit of a baby king too at the time, to be able to know that side of the community very well.
Mm-hmm. Cause like from people I know, and, you know, I don't have experience as a drag performer, but I have experience as someone who books drag, who, you know, knows people. There is a very small community of basically the queens and like the handful of regularly, the ones that Pride calls, the one that, so do you think that, you know, sort of taking a break and stepping in and out, does that hold you, like, hold not only you, but like other community members back from being in that little clique that like are straight up the people who get paid more?
That's fair. It is, drag, especially here, does have a good clique. You know who is in it. And yeah, no, I think if anyone in there was to step out, you kind of have to keep, I think every time you come back, you have to push yourself back in. Mm-hmm. You have to kind of push your way back in to be like, no, I'm here, like, book me. And also, unfortunately, like this is a benefit for some people and not for others. A lot of our drag community is very tied in with our cis gay man community, which, if you're not in it, as I am not a cis gay man, then, you know, you just might not meet as many people. Mm-hmm. And so I think it kind of ties in a lot on who you know, how long you know them. And so some people do really well, but I think stepping out in that regard hurts your ability to get booked for shows. And you have to every time push your way in. Like, I have yet as a, like, I've done a couple shows and I've reached out to performers and producers to get into shows, but I've always had to reach out. Mm-hmm. I have not yet had someone reach out to me.
You've not been scouted.
I have not been scouted, but
if you're listening and you want to scout, Johnny Dapper is available.
I will definitely join your show. I don't know the timeline for some people. Some people get in really quick. Some people takes a lot more time.
And I wonder too, Emma, you might feel the same thing in comedy, but like, traditionally, when you have a drag performance that you choreograph, produce, you've rehearsed, you've done your makeup, you've got your outfits ready to go, you can usually take that one performance and perform that performance for a while. Similar with comedy, right? Like, Emma, you can have a set that you can be like, okay, I've worked on these jokes, I've workshopped these jokes, and I'm going to keep performing these jokes at different venues because it's a different audience. But when it's online and you do that recording, it's not like a one, like you can't then send that recording out to as many people. It doesn't feel the same.
Oh, but you can.
Well, and you can, but I think like as an artist, it doesn't feel as fulfilling because it's like, once you've recorded it and then you send it to a few different groups that are going to do like an online drag show, it's not the same as when you get to perform it every single time, right? And get the audience reaction and feel like that engagement back and forth. And a lot of drag performances are super engaging with the audience. You know, people got their money, their tips ready to, you know, throw them on stage, hand them to the performer. Not so much in comedy, although Emma, if I come to your show, I will throw money at you if you want me to.
I will too.
There's fun at the end, but if you just throw it directly on me, that'd be sick.
Okay. Amazing.
I'll get a money gun.
That'd be fucking sweet.
But I'm just curious, like in the online reality that we live in now, like, does that feel like an apt sort of?
Yeah, you definitely have to, like, you feel like you have to put together a lot more for a small amount of space in a show.
Yeah, it's like 3 minutes you get.
Yeah, you get 3 minutes and you've worked probably a couple weeks on this one, from the idea to the final production. Like, you've worked so much on it that and having the reactions.
CQT would like to thank our community sponsors, without whom our 2021 funding drive would not have been as successful. Lola Rosa, La Banquise, Teiano, Lufa Farms, Au Vivre, Fin du Vinyl, Constellation Records, Drawn and Quarterly, Paragraph Books, Curse Blebedeb, Left Wing Books, Adrenaline Tattoo. Make sure to pay your funding drive pledge before May 1st, 2021 to be entered into our prize draw. For details on prizes, go to ckut.ca.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
On.
There is this thing going on.
Do
you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called?
The news have brought to you live.
Welcome back to The Avalanche on CQUT 90.3 FM. You are just listening to the podcast Disability is Art. And with that completes this episode of The Avalanche, a special edition of Off the Hour, airing every Wednesday from 5 to 6. To stay up to date with Avalanche news, check out our Twitter, at AvalancheCKUT. If you still wanted to support us during the funding drive, donations can be made until May 1st. Thank yous are due to all those who make educational and inspirational radio here at CKUT possible. If you'd like more information on anything you heard tonight, or would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact The Avalanche at avalancheckut.ca or CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 6788, or email news at ckut.ca. Standing for Hersey, that's up next. I'm gonna go get some more.
the party is over. You came with your new friends and her mom jeans and her new fans, and she's perfect and I hate it. Oh, so glad you made it. I'm so glad you could come back. Somebody get the tacos. Somebody spark the blunt. Let's start the narcos off at episode one. Bring the gin, got the juice. Bring the sin, got that too. Won't you shut up? No, you're my favorite. Myself think I need help with P. I'm not more attractive. I'm sorry, I'm not more ladylike. I'm sorry, I don't shave my legs at night. I'm sorry, I'm not your baby mama. I'm sorry, you got karma coming to you collect.